This is Derek Bros. This is Derek Bros of the Conscious Resistance. I'm here in Standing Rock.
That man is wanted in 5 different countries: Chile, Argentina, Brazil.
We've been fighting a long time. We've all lost so very much. So many loved ones gone.
Don't you fucking tease that horse!
You are not alone. There are pockets of resistance all around the planet. We are at the brink. Above all, stay alive. You have no idea how important.
Hey everyone, this is Derek Bros with the Conscious Resistance Network, and today is Tuesday, May 31st, 2022, and I have some things to share with you guys today. Please let me know if you can hear me okay. Before we get into the topic, I will be covering my latest article for The Last American Vagabond called Here's What You Need to Know About the World Economic Forum's 2022 Meeting. So we'll be getting to that and previewing what I think you need to know, as the title indicates. I do want to mention, while I'm here with you guys, that I will be doing an interview tomorrow afternoon with Ryan Christian of The Last American Vagabond, the founder and main guy over at The Last American Vagabond. We'll be doing our interview tomorrow afternoon, getting into this, as well as another article I'm working on right now, which I'll be writing today, about the whole monkeypox situation, simulation, and all that stuff you need to know. So stay tuned to thelastamericanvagabond.com for more of that. But first off, I want to make sure you guys know, and I encourage you to bookmark, hit Control D on your computers or save it on your cell phones, theconsciousresistance.com. This is my home for all of my content, where I've been broadcasting for a decade now. You can find content in Spanish. You can find articles, documentaries. You can find all of our meditations. You can find interviews and video reports, conscious music, different podcasts, and all of my journalistic work here. As I said, my documentaries, you can download my books, learn more about agorism. If you want to get some inspiration, check out my presentations. You can search this website by category, look up our motivational, all kinds of fun stuff. And of course, if you want to support us and the work we do to keep us bringing you truthful information, please go to the invest page. That's theconsciousresistance.com/invest. So, all right. Thank you guys for that. Now let's get into it. As I said, last week was the Davos meeting. The World Economic Forum Davos meeting, Davos, Switzerland. And this is something that many of us have been paying attention to for a couple of years now, I'd say, because, well, we are inundated with the realities of the, I mean, I don't even know what you want to say, the Great Reset, the technocracy, etc. And it is something we all have to contend with. We have become more and more aware of. People are recognizing that there is a push by these people, the World Economic Forum, for a great reset. And myself and other journalists have been documenting this for over 2 years now. Well, actually just about 2 years, because the Great Reset was originally announced in June 2020. And so they've been meeting for decades, many of us not paying attention to them until recently when they announced the Great Reset. But now that we are paying attention to them, every time they're having a meeting, every time they're doing something, we're trying to see what they're up to, what are they talking about, what plans, because this is an open conspiracy. That's the thing is, yes, there are probably discussions. I mean, of course, there are discussions behind closed doors, things that we are not privy to or aware of. But by and large, this is an open conspiracy that is happening right in front of the people of the world. It's just that the masses are either too distracted, too broke, too busy, too exhausted, too burnt out to care. And even those of us who do care and who do see, we don't really know what's the exact perfect solution. So they can operate in open and people still do nothing. And it, you know, doesn't really slow them down too often. And I want to mention as well that this is why myself and other people created the Greater Reset, thegreaterreset.org, which is an annual event, takes place every January, both in Texas and Mexico. And it will be taking place again in January 2023. Next month in June, well, just a couple of days, it'll be June. But in June, we'll be announcing the exact dates for the Greater Reset in Mexico and in Texas. And that is our version of countering these people. So when they typically meet in January, they're meeting in May this year because of COVID, whatnot. But typically they meet in January. So they meet for 5 days to discuss technology and the environment and governance and media and healthcare and this and that. Well, we do the same thing at the Greater Reset, except for we do it from a bottom-up, decentralized, privacy-based, solutions-focused, people-focused perspective. Now, let's get into this, guys. The purpose of this article, I'm not going to read the article to you. I encourage you to go do some reading for yourself. But I did want to save some of you time. I know many of you tell me that you don't always have time to read my articles, or maybe you have a preference for videos, whatever it may be. Some of you are busy, and you know the reason I do my work is because I know some of you are busy and don't have time to do 12 hours of research a day or spend all of your extra time, you know, digging into various documents and sources, etc. So that's why myself and Ryan and James Corbett and many other people do this. So while I won't read this to you, I am going to give you an even briefer overview than this article is. But the, you know, the crux of it is this: the more than 2,500 heads of state, business executives, non-government organizations, and media personalities, they got together in Davos to plot the future of the world. That's what it comes down to. This is an open conspiracy. And many of the people involved who get invited to the World Economic Forum believe that they are doing something good and that they're out there to, you know, serve the public good. But in reality, the people like Klaus Schwab and Henry Kissinger and some of the others who are more of the actual steering committee and the power players, they're fully engulfed and embracing this technocratic transhumanist outlook, which wants to take us to human 2.0 and use the fourth industrial revolution to merge man and machine and to take us into smart cities and all this kind of stuff, including, you know, this is the things they were talking about the World Economic Forum. We'll get into some of these videos and some of these clips. But the main topics that I focused on that they were covering, and of course, there were others, because as I wrote here, that there were literally hundreds of talks and panels to review. So I might be writing more articles in the coming weeks about World Economic Forum 2022. It's just going to take some time because they had dozens of panels every day. And obviously, I didn't have time to see or read and listen to every single one of them, but I will. And with time, there might be more information that needs to be brought to our attention, because oftentimes, maybe you guys have recognized this, that we have situations where people are, we're finding clips from World Economic Forum in 2017 or 2020 or 2000, wherever. And it's 3 years old. And it's like, oh, wow, how come nobody was paying attention at the time when this was happening? So we need to, that's why it is important. While we don't give them our full energy, this is why my last article about welcome to 2030, I own land, et cetera, we have to put our energy into creating what we want and manifesting our own 2030. It is also important to pay attention to what these crazies are up to. So they talked about Ukraine. They talked about YouTube censorship. They talked about the metaverse. They talked about Pfizer and vaccines. The next pandemic they talked about. They talked about climate change, including a commitment to carbon removal. They talked about the ESG, environmental, social, and governance criteria. They also talked about central bank digital currencies. And that's kind of where I left it, right? And there was also discussions, I probably should go back and include it, and excuse me for not including it, the food crisis. There was at least a couple of panels on the food crisis, food shortage. But by and large, I will say it wasn't their main focus. So it wasn't the main focus of what they were, you know, putting out there. So Ukraine, it was basically just all of these people saying, we have to support Ukraine. We have to support Ukraine. And of course, blaming the Ukraine situation on the food shortages and stuff like that. But what I thought was interesting is former U.S. Secretary of State Henry Kissinger, also known as Jabba the Hutt, started off the week by encouraging the international community to cede some territory to Russia so there may be peace. So basically, Kissinger was saying, like, Ukraine needs to accept like the status quo before, you know, go back to like letting Putin have Crimea and informally rule the Donbass region of Ukraine. And this was unacceptable, according to Ukrainian president, the actor Zelensky, who criticized Kissinger and basically saying he's living in World War II times. You know, his family fled from Nazi Germany. Would he have told them just to accept the Nazis? And, you know, of course, just more efforts to try to promote the idea that Putin is literally Hitler and we all need to come and save him. So we'll see how, you know, what comes out of that. I can't really claim to know what that means. You know, if we have a disagreement between one of the puppets and one of the other elder puppets saying, hey, just accept this, it could be a disagreement within their own little circles, or it could all be a show. And then YouTube censorship was just confirmed and affirmed by Susan Wojcicki. I always forget how to pronounce her name. Her and her sister, of course, highly connected to the whole apparatus. I think it's her. Her sister, I think, is the one that's married to the Google guy, the head of Google. I wrote that in another article. I can't remember. But yeah, don't trust those people. Well, Susan of YouTube, CEO, fame, made comments to the editor-in-chief of Fortune magazine when she was asked about YouTube's efforts to censor misinformation. She said, quote, "I think there will always be work that we have to do because there will always be incentives for people to be creating misinformation. The challenge will be to keep staying ahead of that and make sure that we are understanding what they are and the different ways that people may use to try to trick our systems and make sure that our systems are staying ahead of what's necessary to make sure that we're managing that." So I would expect there to be more censorship. When it came to the metaverse, there was a number of different panels and discussions related to the metaverse in a couple of different ways. And I focused on one of them. For one, the World Economic Forum, they announced a new initiative that they called Defining and Building the Metaverse. And they said this is about, quote, bringing together key stakeholders, there's that stakeholder capitalism, to build an economically viable, interoperable, safe, and inclusive metaverse. Now, this announcement was supported by the head of Sony Interactive Entertainment, the president and vice chair of Microsoft, the former deputy prime minister of the UK and current president of global affairs with Meta, also known as Facebook, and the CEO of Magic Leap, who was also formerly the CEO of Microsoft and involved in the ID 2020 project. So again, to repeat, this announcement of the World Economic Forum defining and building the metaverse is in partnership and support of Sony Entertainment, Microsoft, Meta, and Magic Leap, people who are already working on building the metaverse, now directly collaborating with the World Economic Forum, the people trying to bring us this dystopian future where you'll own nothing and be happy. Sounds like that'll turn out great. Peggy Johnson of Magic Leap, again, the one formerly CEO of Microsoft, also participated in a panel titled Shaping a Shared Future, Making the Metaverse. And I haven't even had time to really watch the full talk, but I guarantee you, if you do have time, there's probably things in there worth, you know, kind of little nuggets worth picking out of there. Feel free to email them or comment them if you have seen that. But in regards to the metaverse, we also had Microsoft CEO Satya Nadella participating in a panel with Klaus Schwab discussing the metaverse and the future of work. And if you don't know much about the metaverse or the whole great narrative, I wrote a two-part investigation a couple months back called The Great Narrative and the Metaverse, the Dystopian Vision of a Future, Dystopian Vision of the Future. I encourage you to read both those. If this is like metaverse, you know, you kind of got a vague understanding, but you don't really understand how it's going to relate to the bigger picture, read my two-part investigation. I encourage you. It will keep you informed and educated on that topic. And then I'm also so check that one out. I'm also in the article talking about Pfizer and vaccines. This is, of course, vaccines you would expect would be a big part of the discussion. And there were probably more mentions than what I found here. But what I focused on is that, of course, they are talking about giving Pfizer for free to all on a not-for-profit basis to 45 low-income nations. This was like a big announcement. Oh, my God, the Pfizer CEO is announcing this. Of course, he made no mentions of the adverse reactions caused by their COVID-19 injections. And I think that this is interesting. Like I said, right now, I'm working on an article about monkeypox, but we're currently in a time where it feels like most people, the whole COVID narrative is over. But at the same time, we're being told there's new waves of COVID-19 infections. We're also being told that there's this scare of monkeypox developing. And even today, the World Health Organization announcing like, it's not a threat yet, but it could be. So while that's happening, you know, they're still trying to give away these COVID vaccines. And I thought it was interesting. And Ryan had this clip right here. He added this clip that in the same talk, the CEO of Pfizer, he's going on discussing how literally they can't get rid of the vaccines here. Let me play this because like there's so many unused because people don't want them. I thought that's interesting because they're telling us all around the world that 90% of the population is 60-70% of the population is vaccinated. But check this out.
Right now, for example, there are billions of doses of our vaccine, the vaccine that was used in Europe, in the US, but it is offered to low-income countries for free. And it is offered by the US government mainly, but also by the European Union, but they are doing donations. So the US government bought for us at cost and they donated. They can't use them right now because we discovered that one thing is supply and the other thing is to have educated population that believe that vaccines is doing well.
Educated populations that believe the vaccines are doing well. So I guess he's just saying we're all uneducated because we don't want their jabs. All right. So that was the CEO of Pfizer. Let's continue on here. Now, this next section, again, we're talking about Pfizer vaccines, et cetera. Well, they're also talking about the next pandemic. This is something we've been hearing from Bill Gates since, I mean, when the first one started, really. That's what they keep telling us. There's going to be a next pandemic. Bill Gates also put out a book recently talking about this. I think it's literally called The Next Pandemic or Pandemic 2.0. Well, in a panel titled Preparing for the Next Pandemic, here it is, Bill Gates and Peter Sands, who's the executive director of the Global Fund to Fight AIDS, Helen E. Clark of the World Health Organization, and Francis D'Souza, who is with Illumina Incorporated, which is an interesting company. I wrote, the presence of D'Souza and Illumina is an interesting choice, especially in regards to the next pandemic, because the company deals with DNA sequencing and genomics. So maybe they help develop some of the mRNA technology, or they're planning on some more genetic type vaccinations, injections. There was also a panel titled The Post-Pandemic City, Not Business as Usual. And again, this is just them talking about how a city might change in the post-COVID world. And this Ryan here linked to an article I wrote, Smart Cities. If you don't know, again, the whole smart cities thing, if you want to really understand it, I encourage you to go read my investigation into that as well. But one other thing I noted was that it was interesting that there was Francis Suarez, who is the mayor of Miami and president of the U.S. Conference of Mayors. And I first heard about this years ago because the mayor of Houston, who I've tried to expose over the years, was part of the U.S. Conference of Mayors. I think at one point he was the sitting president. They sort of rotate between mayors of different mayors from around the country every couple of years. And so all this is, it's like this it's not a really a governmental body. It's just like all the mayors who are elected agree to work together and collaborate. And this is how they bring down the issues from the global agenda down to the local. You have a mayor of Miami, and yeah, Miami is a big city, but they're taking him there and he is representing the U.S. Conference of Mayors. So what he's discussing here, which is the post-pandemic city, he's surely going to take those ideas back to the U.S. Conference of Mayors. Well, he'll spread it to the other mayors and they'll take it back to their cities and they'll start implementing those changes. And so I wrote, the detail is worth noting as an example of how a global agenda, Agenda 2030, climate change, sustainable design, starts at places like the World Economic Forum and filters its way down to the local level where it is implemented by local officials like Mayor Suarez. So that's important to understand. And I've done other videos where I've talked about that, where I see, for example, like the mayor of Houston, Sylvester Turner, also sits on something called the Resilient Foundation, which is funded by the Rockefeller Foundation. And he's doing that while he's a sitting mayor for an American city. So there's clear conflicts of interest, but people don't pay attention. They also talk about climate change. And of course, it's just more of the same thing that it's, you know, we're getting told like it's critical for action. They had the China special envoy say it isn't about words anymore. It's about action. Climate action now is critical. And then you got former Secretary of State and current U.S. special presidential envoy for climate, John Kerry, saying that the only way forward, and this was interesting, was to, quote, radically change our economic system and our reliance on fossil fuels. And he said specifically over the next 8 years. Well, what do you think? 2030, guys, like I've been saying, they're paying attention to that deadline. Kerry also noted, quote, we have the technology to change. We need the political will. If we can harness this, we can still avoid the worst effects of climate change. So he's already saying, like, we have the technology. Now we just need the political will, which basically when you translate that from politician speak, that means they need to get the people to go along with it. And if you're just joining, guys, I am going over my article, What You Need to Know About the World Economic Forum's 2022 meeting, which just concluded this past Thursday, I believe. And I wrote this article for The Last American Vagabond covering some aspects. We're finishing up here on the climate aspect, and then we're pretty much done for the evening. I just wanted to share this with you because I know some of you don't have time to read this, although I will encourage you to read it. And even if you can't read it and you can only watch my summary of it, please share this video and share the article for your friends who might watch a video and your friends who might read. The other aspect they talked about was a commitment to carbon removal. The only reason I thought this was worth noting is just because they are creating new organizations, and the World Economic Forum creates lots of organizations, lots of these so-called public-private partnerships. And it's just like a maze trying to keep up with all of them. Well, this one's called the First Movers Coalition, which they said is focused on cleaning up the most carbon-intensive industry sectors. And the coalition announced a major expansion to more than 50 corporate members worth about $8.5 trillion and a total of 9 leading governments. John Kerry said that, along with Bill Gates, who's also the founder of something called Breakthrough Energy, the coalition welcomed new nations, including India, Japan, and Sweden, to the steering board, as well as Denmark, Italy, Norway, Singapore, and the UK as government partners.
Other corporations who signed on include Alphabet, which is the owner of Google, Microsoft, AES, a bunch of companies I don't recognize, maybe you do recognize, but things like FedEx, Ford, Heidelberg Cement, National Grid, Novolis, Schneider Electric, Swiss Re, and Vestas. And so it was also interesting, I found this, that you had Norwegian finance minister in this discussion talking about this carbon renewal and the climate change thing, saying that, yeah, there's going to be some energy shortages and some inflation in this transition that we must do, that we must act on now in the next 8 years. But she said the pain will be worth it. So this is just an example. I'll play this quick clip of an elite person sitting at the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland. She's a CEO, finance CEO in Norway. I'm sure she is not hurting financially, telling the rest of the world, yeah, there's going to be some energy shortages and there's going to be some inflationary pressures, but the pain is worth it.
We need to accept that there will be some pain in the process. The pace that we need will open up for missteps. It will open up for shortages on energy. It will create inflationary pressures. And maybe we need to start talking about that, that that pain is actually worth it. Because if we don't, there's no business case, there's no economy, there's no welfare. But so far, I think we have been a little bit careful actually talking about the pain in the short term that is likely to come from this very important change.
Yeah.
The pain and the shortcoming, guys. This is why I've been trying not to fearmonger or scare anybody, but tell you guys, they're quietly putting the word out right in front of us, and it's getting more and more obvious about food shortages and rising food costs and gas costs. I can say that the month I've been here in Texas, in Houston, which is an area that's usually sheltered from any economic woes like the rest of the country experiences, it's been insane. I mean, everything is just way more expensive, and I can see it getting worse, and I can see it getting difficult for a lot of people, including myself, if I had to stay here. Okay, they also talked about environmental, social, and governance criteria. And if you don't know about this, I also wrote an article about this, if you want to check that out. I wrote about this in my article, The Coming Terror of Social Impact Finance and Social Credit Scores. And so what it comes down to is basically the ESG criteria, environmental, social, and governance criteria, is a way that corporations can say, hey, you know, score us on these criteria, these three measurements, environmental, social, and governance. And, you know, this way we can tell people, look, we got good scores. This means that we are responsible. We're a sustainable company. We care about, you know, racism and social justice and going green and all that kind of stuff. So that's it. And it's also a way to promote the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals. This is like an end run around it, right? You don't necessarily have to get all the governments to comply. They just start through this public-private partnership and this open conspiracy promoting ideas like ESG, which are in line with the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals and Agenda 2030, and then make it a popular thing among the corporations. So all the corporations start feeling the pressure to go that way. So whether or not the government is trying to coerce them with law or not, they're going to do it because this is what is being promoted and this is what they're all buying into. And a lot of them understand that this is what they want. They want to go in this direction. So you have to ask yourself, why would these corporations, you know, why would and Corbett has reported on this with the How Big Oil, Why Big Oil documentaries, that the Rockefellers and other companies who made their riches off oil, you know, now all of a sudden they're pledging like to let's end big oil and this and that. Like, why would they be ahead of that? Is all of a sudden they developed a conscience and they want to help the world? No, it's because they're the ones driving the change to make sure that they can also be ahead of the pack with the new green economy based on ESG, et cetera. So what I wrote here was, while much of the conversation around ESG focuses on corporations attempting to go green, many researchers suspect that ESG-like criteria will eventually be applied to individuals as some form of social credit score. And for example, this is pretty creepy, guys. During a panel titled Responsible Consumption, Alibaba Group President, if you don't know about Alibaba, they're a huge company, mainly based in China, I believe. Their president, J. Michael Evans, discussed the importance of his company and others adopting the ESG criteria. He also boasted about the development of a, quote, individual carbon footprint tracker to monitor what you buy, what you eat, as well as where and how you travel. And this is him talking about that.
We're developing, through technology, an ability for consumers to measure their own carbon footprint. What does that mean? That's, where are they traveling? How are they traveling? What are they eating? What are they consuming on the platform? So, individual carbon footprint tracker. Stay tuned. We don't have it operational yet, but this is something that we're working on.
Wow. There you go. Individual carbon footprint tracker, right? And some people want this. I've seen people who really are about, you know, trying to protect the environment and track their carbon because it's good for the earth. They want like a Fitbit kind of thing like that. Like, give me the Fitbit. It tells me not only my steps, but it's telling me how much carbon I'm saving or how much carbon I'm using. Okay. Oh, I wanted to go gas. Well, actually, you know, that's too much carbon. And right now it's a personal choice, right? People are doing this out of the kindness of their heart. But sooner or later, these things will be social credit scores where you will have carbon caps and carbon credits, not just for the corporations, but it'll be for the individual. And they'll say, well, you've already driven three times this week, and you've already used up all your carbon credits. Sorry, sir, your smart vehicle will not start anymore until you next week when you get more credits to use. And so let's imagine you're like, well, I want to use a blender. Well, I'm sorry, but that uses more carbon credits than you have at the time, sir. I'm sorry, your smart appliances will not start for you because your digital ID shows that your social credit score is below the needed number in order to operate this because you've used the maximum social credit allowance, carbon credits for this week. That might sound crazy, guys, but that's where this is going. That's what's happening right here. And so I wrote, Evans also discussed how his company is working on incentivizing the public to use systems which encourage environmentally friendly behavior. The system described by Evans is part of the push towards consumer incentivization of using points and rewards. And these systems are another step in the direction of social credit scores. Now, think about this in the context that most of you understand it. You have a rewards card at your local grocery store, right? And you punch in the number when you go pay, or you scan the little, you know, your thing on your keys, the little keychain thing. You scan it so it says, oh yeah, you're a rewards member, and you get some coupons. Or maybe if you do it with if you're a frequent flyer, right, you get bonus points on certain things, or maybe you get hotels. All those things, there's nothing inherently wrong with them. And yet at the same time, they're conditioning people to be used to this sort of system. And that is the sort of system that they will eventually apply, not to just like, oh, cool, my grocery store is giving me some discounts because I'm a regular member, but no, it'll be people used to trying to get points and rewards in order to gain access to privileges, things that we think are rights that are slowly being turned to privileges. You will be allowed to fly if you have the right score, if you have the right amount of points and rewards, right? That's what this is all about. So this is another thing that this guy said, the Alibaba president, quote, we have something within our business called AMAP. So what we are going to do is allow people to calculate the best route, the most efficient route, and also the most efficient form of transportation. Then if they take advantage of those recommendations, we will give them bonus points that they can redeem elsewhere on our platform. So they are incentivized to do the right thing. And that's exactly what I'm talking about, right? It's like, okay, we're going to tell you that this is the best, most economically, environmentally friendly route to take. You have a choice. You can go this other way. Right now you have a choice. But if you go the way we're saying is better for you and better for the planet, better for all of us, then we'll give you some bonus points so you can eat some other extra donuts off our platform. Or you can get a discount next time you're ordering your metaverse goggles on Amazon or whatever, right? I mean, I hope you guys understand. I hope I'm making this clear. I really strive to make my words clear and concise and understandable in these articles, as well as in my speech here, guys. I'm really taking my time and your time more and more serious because I know we all have busy lives and things to handle in the face of inflation and rising food prices and shortages and things of all that sort. So I don't do videos on every hot topic of the week, on Ukraine every other day, or on the latest trend of the week. I don't do clickbait. I don't do fear mongering or fear porn like some in the independent and mainstream media. So if this is something that you're into, you probably won't find much value in my work. But if you want thoughtful, deeper work, I encourage you to follow me at theconsciousresistance.com. And wherever else you're watching, please subscribe there as well. I'm also on Spotify, etc. I can't do this work without you guys. The only work I get paid for is to write articles, thanks to Ryan. Beyond that, all the reporting I do, all the news gathering, the pyramid of power, etc., is time and energy that I'm not paid for. And I'm happy to do it because it matters more than anything else to me in the world. But if you can afford $1 or $2 a month, especially because I'm no longer accepting or supporting Patreon, things of that sort, please go to theconsciousresistance.com/invest. I have a PO box and you can mail me cool things, financial support, love letters, hate mail, whatever. I'm happy to receive it.
I appreciate you guys so, so much. And look, the reason I wrote this article again is because I know all of you don't have time to listen to all the different talks at the World Economic Forum, or maybe you didn't even know it was happening, but you need to be aware and you need to know what's happening, even if you are afraid of it sometimes. We can't look away. We can't hide or cover our ears or cover our eyes. I mean, we can, but apathy is death, and you'll be selling out your family and future generations, as well as failing your ancestors that got you to where you are. So if you care about what's coming and you want to actually do something about it, my friends, I encourage you to keep yourself informed, keep those that you love around you informed as much as they are willing to listen. But most of all, take action, take action, take action. Go buy seeds. Go buy seeds right now. Go start growing food in your backyard. Start a garden today. I'm building a garden for my mom in her backyard next week before I go back to Mexico. Stock up on extra water and buy some extra cans of beans and good food goods and dry storable food. Start canning and jarring at home. Do these little things. Learn these skills that we have forgotten. And those are the solutions. Those are the real solutions, right? Taking care of ourselves. Learn about permaculture. Get your spirit right. Get your mind right. These are the real solutions. Don't be consumed by fear. Stop listening to the corporate mainstream media. That's the real solution, guys. I appreciate your time today. Again, my website is theconsciousresistance.com. Stay tuned for an interview tomorrow with Ryan of The Last American Vagabond. Ryan and I will be talking on his channel about this article. We'll be going even more in depth, plus my new article on monkeypox. And whatever they throw at us, guys, just remember, we are powerful, we are beautiful, and we are free. We got this, my friends. Till next time, peace. Since 2012, the Conscious Resistance Network has been an independent media organization focused on empowering individuals through education, philosophy, health, and community organizing. We work to create a world where corporate and state power do not rule over the lives of free human beings. Our motto is leading by example and helping others in their pursuit of freedom. Visit theconsciousresistance.com to find our articles, documentaries, interviews, podcasts, books, and more. Remember, you are powerful, you are beautiful, and you are free.